Hey, it's Doug here, and I just wanted to pop in before the episode. We have a great interview with Jennifer, and we talk about reaching financial independence and actually retiring early in about 2 years in a high cost of living area. This is a long interview, and I decided to divide it into two different segments, and I'll tell you how it'll be organized. So we'll have the first part, which is this episode right now, and then we'll have the normal sound check that we normally record. That'll be at the end of this episode. The next episode, we'll have the remainder of the interview. In addition, instead of the normal sound check at the end, Jennifer volunteered to fill in some gaps because we covered a lot of information, but we didn't cover everything, and it was already getting to be a little bit long. So Jennifer was like, hey, I want to record a little bit so I could explain how I reach FI in 2 years and the unique situation, and really kind of talk about the math and some of the aggressive investing that she was doing. There's some other factors as well. So that's going to be at the end of the second episode. So not this one, but the next one. And then there will also be some resources like podcast books and that sort of things that she mentions in that part as well. So today, first part of the interview, normal sound check. Next time, we'll have the remainder of the interview and then some amendments and some other things that Jennifer wanted to mention. So that's how this is organized. Thanks to Jennifer for volunteering to do this and putting in extra effort and all that. Really appreciate it, because I know when we do the interviews, like, I want to keep asking more questions and go deeper and deeper, but I do usually have some arc that I imagine that the episode will take. And we have a certain amount of time that we can record, so it's not 3 or 4 hours long. I think that's it. We could send it to the episode for part one now. Thanks a lot to Jennifer, and let's get to it. Hey, what's going on? Welcome to the Mile High FI podcast. I'm Doug Cunnington, and have a pretty fun interview for today. Jennifer is joining me, and she has a couple interesting against the grain facts about her situation. So she discovered FI about 2 years ago, and she lives in a high cost of living area, the LA area, and she was able to retire, or we're calling it maybe a mini sabbatic or mini retirement sabbatical, probably retirement at this point, in just 2 years. So very impressive. And if I'm reading my notes right, she was a pretty big spender, almost paycheck to paycheck for many years. So not a sort of natural saver over all those years. So Jennifer, welcome to the show. I'm excited to chat with you.
Thank you, Doug. I'm so excited to be here. I've been listening to your podcast now for years, and it's definitely one of the podcasts I listen to kind of help me get to FI literally in about 2 years.
So we'll dig into a lot of your backstory. We'll hear about your corporate background and all that stuff, but we'll just jump in. And when did you discover FI, and what was the mechanism, podcast or blogs, or someone told you about it?
So I had always really been interested in personal finance, dating back probably almost 20 years, back to like the Susie Orman days. And then pretty much I had worked, you know, my way up and like wasn't really following a lot of the advice despite my interest in personal finance. And so when COVID hit, I started to listen to more podcasts, which I hadn't done before. And so I was listening to podcasts like How to Money, The Clark Howard Show. Started on this path with like Dave Ramsey to try to get out of debt. And I think it was on the How to Money podcast, they had interviewed someone who was in the FI movement, and that got me really interested. So that actually then introduced me to all of these other FI podcasts like Choose FI, like yours, Catching Up to FI. So I kind of went down the rabbit hole and just started listening to podcasts and audiobooks pretty much daily, starting around like March of 2 years ago. And then I have been living in LA since 2020, and I discovered that there was a local Los Angeles Choose FI meetup. So I started going to those meetups here in LA pretty much right away, within a month of discovering these podcasts. And so from those meetups, I got a lot of great information. and also ended up going to Camp Phi that first year. I discovered the Phi movement, which was great, down in near San Diego. And then last year, I went to the Phi Freedom Retreat in Bali. So I've been trying to attend an in-person event at least once a year, like a conference or retreat. But I pretty much got really passionate and almost obsessive about Phi once I learned about it. And like I said, I was just consuming any audiobook or any podcast I could find.
Got it. And you were 20 plus years in the corporate industry. We won't talk about jobs too much. I'm usually not too interested in people's jobs, but especially now that you're not doing it anymore. But what was it like to discover sort of the Phi playbook and understanding that you were a high earner, like you maybe could have saved money better along the way? You're in a great spot now, but like, what was it like to have that switch flip?
So when I discovered Phi and realized that if I had just saved even a smaller portion of my paycheck towards, you know, 401k or Roth or brokerages, I would have probably been able to retire a decade earlier, at least. So there was a lot of regret. I definitely felt like I had missed a lot of opportunities and had spent my money really foolishly. However, I was able to get past that guilt and regret and realize that the only way forward and for me to really achieve this goal is to just focus on what I could do now and how could I really take some somewhat extreme steps to really look at all the ways I could, you know, both cut expenses or maybe increase my income or be more strategic with what I was investing in. And so, yeah, it was really pretty much a big wake-up call. And I think part of the reason why I became so fanatically obsessed was because my work life had become so miserable. And I really was so depressed thinking about the fact that I would have to work in this type of job or environment for another 20 years until I reached, you know, 60 or my early 60s, which is the path I thought I was going to have to be on. I didn't really know there was an alternative to escape it way earlier.
And you worked in the big tech industry, very, very successful. You started in graphic design and then basically went as high up as you could. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
When I started school, I studied graphic design and was really excited about it, really passionate about it. I left school and moved to New York. And I was actually in New York for almost 20 years and worked at some really well-known media companies. Had really been able to kind of establish a good kind of work history, great kind of accomplishments at some of these previous jobs. And then I switched over to big tech in 2016. And I left New York to move to San Francisco and be more obviously in the kind of Silicon Valley atmosphere. And from there, I was able to secure pretty much like head of creative and head of marketing roles at some of these companies. And so that really, I mean, that pretty much like tripled my income. However, as I said before, I was living in this state of just constant stress and burnout and not knowing how to kind of find an outlet for that stress. So I was pretty much foolishly just like letting my money come into my account and just spending it on whatever I felt like at the time could relieve some of the stress and anxiety from work and the pressure. So I, even though I was making literally probably triple what I had been making in New York, if not more, I was very much living paycheck to paycheck and I was going out to eat at, you know, expensive restaurants all the time or getting delivery Uber Eats like daily and then going on vacations whenever I could escape. Because I hadn't really understood or learned that there was another way out. I just was being very reactive with my money.
There's so many places I want to go with this. Let's talk about the spending area of this, maybe the travel, because we talk in the sound check about eating out and like the food that you enjoy, but you were also taking some pretty big trips. Can you give like an example of one or two and maybe like the scope of the cost so people can understand like, hey, you were actually running through a pretty good amount of money?
Yeah, absolutely. So living in New York was obviously beneficial for my travel desires because it's such a hub and I could fly internationally anywhere, anytime, pretty much. And so I spent between jobs, I was kind of working freelance, nomadic, and I was going to South America a lot. And so in the span of about a year and a half, I think I went to South America, specifically Argentina and Patagonia, four different times. And so those trips were pretty costly because it was, you know, I just wanted to get the maximum enjoyment and I was staying at, you know, nicer hotels and I was staying there for longer periods of time. So between jobs, I had lots of time off and one trip was, you know, almost a month. And South America is not that expensive, which is great. But I was just very much in the mindset of I had been so burnt out. I rarely had time off. So I just went, you know, no holds barred. You know, I flew like business class. I was not going to like skimp on this trip. So the first trip I think I took to mainly Argentina and I visited like three different regions, including Patagonia. I think that trip cost about $14,000, including the airfare. And I had booked also all of these additional experiences, like visiting not one, but like multiple glaciers and getting guided tours and hiking these glaciers. Cause to me, that was like such a novel and exciting experience. And I really wanted, I thought to myself, this is the only time I'm going. So I might as well just go all out. But I ended up loving it so much. I ended up going back three more times and visiting other parts of Patagonia. But so that's one example. And then other examples of me just spending a lot on vacations ranged from great cultural and interesting trips to places like Italy, which is one of my favorite countries in Europe, to then also just kind of splurging on weekends from New York to Miami to escape the cold and staying at like really nice hotels and, you know, just blowing several thousand dollars in a weekend just to escape for like 3 days, because to me, that was like the only outlet I had. And then generally, some of the more expensive trips I've taken were to kind of like retreats and spas like Miraval in Tucson, Arizona, which it's kind of like a combination of like a wellness spiritual retreat. It's all inclusive. So those trips can run multiple thousands of dollars because everything is included, which I kind of like, but then also you're spending a lot. But then you know that there's like a ceiling, like you cannot go over that. But all of those trips were just things that I originally had thought, this is what I need. This is how I'm going to get through this stressful time, or I need this. It didn't look like a want. It looked like a need at the time because I didn't know the difference back then.
And we'll jump ahead in the story and just like, can you contrast on how you view trips and travel now and how you do it on a smaller budget, but still get the satisfaction that you need from it?
Yeah, sure. So now the way I look at travel is there has to be some component where, yes, I'm getting something novel, but I also feel like it's going to be maybe something more of like a bucket list trip. Or for me, for example, a big trip I took last year was to Bali to attend Amy's Five Freedom Retreat, which was amazing. I'd always wanted to go to Bali. So that was a combination of me connecting with the Phi community and then also exploring something new. And I did spend quite a lot on that trip. The ticket itself was separate, but then I spent multiple days before and, you know, layover in Australia. But I felt like that was worthwhile because I was getting many different benefits from that trip beyond just like exploring a new place. And so now my upcoming trip that I just booked is to go to Santa Fe, New Mexico. And I'm doing it using like a leftover airplane credit. I have like miles to use for the hotel. I'm only going to pay for one night of a hotel. I only booked it because I saw that the rental car rates had been cut in half. So originally I was going to go on this trip like a month ago and I saw that it was too expensive. So I shelved it. And then I just happened to look this weekend. And one of the things that made me decide instead of postponing it until next year was that I recently read the book Die with Zero. And I hadn't read that book yet. And it did make me realize that if I can do something and it's not going to break the bank, but I feel like this is something that's truly either a bucket list item or something that I'm really intrigued by, both culturally and just, you know, I've always wanted to go to Santa Fe, been on my bucket list since I was probably like 18 years old. And so for that, able to do this trip, which, you know, I would probably shelve if I didn't have all these credits and miles, but I'm able to do this trip for probably around maybe, I don't know, just with the travel costs, probably like $700 for 5 days. And normally the old me would have spent probably $3,000 or $4,000 on this trip. But now I'm very much more conscious about the trips I take. And because I live in LA and I'm relatively still new to the area, I take a lot of road trips around LA and there's so much to see. So that's kind of how I'm fulfilling that need for travel and novelty and seeking out new fun experiences.
Very cool. And yeah, Santa Fe is great. We've been a few times and yeah, food was really good. One fun thing is I think at almost all the restaurants, they just had honey on the table. And I love honey, number one. I think it goes with a sopapilla. Have you had sopapilla before? Yeah.
No, I don't know what that is.
It's a pastry. It's like fried sweet dough. So it's like, it's not shaped like a donut, but imagine it kind of like that. And they put cinnamon and sugar and then you cover it with honey. It's like all carbs. Like there's, it's carbs and fat. That's it. Super good. Highly recommend, but look around on the tables. There were many places we went and honey was just like a condiment alongside the hot sauce. So really good.
Thanks for the tip. Yeah. I mean, part of the reason why I'm so excited to go there is also because of the food. So that is exciting. Yeah. And, you know, also the history and archaeology, like I'm going to go to Bandelier Park and go visit the old cave dwellings and things like that. So that archaeology and history is also an aspect of the trip that I find really exciting that I normally would not typically visit.
Let's move into kind of the nuts and bolts. So you were discovering Phi. You got into it really fast. I like the enthusiasm. You started attending meetings and you were treating it very seriously. And you probably realized you needed to make some adjustments because your burn rate was very high. I think when we did the pre-interview, you were talking about basically being paycheck to paycheck. So can you talk about the plan that you put together, how you identified areas of like financial leakage that you needed to patch up, and your whole approach to get things on track so quickly?
Sure. Yeah. So for me, when I discovered Phi approximately almost 2 years ago, there were so many things that I realized I needed to change quickly if I wanted to make a dent in my journey. And I originally projected that I would reach Phi in maybe 5 to 8 years. That was my original thinking. I was thinking, you know, like, oh, well, I have debt. And if I continue with the rent I have here in LA at the prior place I was living at, I really assumed it would be a 5 to 8 year journey conservatively. What I realized from listening to podcasts and audiobooks was that I needed to tackle the big three, which were housing, transportation, and food. And so pretty much March of 2024, I guess is when I discovered Phi. And so later that year in October, I moved in with my partner and that reduced my rent by probably $1,400 because we were splitting a 2-bedroom. Versus me just living on my own. And I had lived on my own for most of my life, actually, in these high cost of living areas like New York and San Francisco. So my rent was always kind of a little bit on the higher side living by myself. Transportation, I bought a used car. I put myself on an aggressive payment plan, unbeknownst to me, prior to discovering Phi. So I was done with those payments pretty much, I think, in end of 2024. So that eliminated a car payment, which was probably about $900 a month because, like I said, even though I only had a 2% interest rate, I just really wanted to pay it down. Mm-hmm. So that freed up some money. And then the food was probably the hardest thing to tackle. And that budget didn't come down probably until fall of last year. That's when it really clicked for me that I really need to get this under control and learn how to cook or be more open to it or be more open to eating at home versus just reaching for Uber Eats or going to a restaurant for a quick meal. And so when I was able to cut down those three expenses, it made quite a big difference in my ability to max out my 401k at my then job. And then I actually did add some money to my brokerage. I wasn't able to contribute to a Roth because my income was too high at the time. And some of the other ways that I started to just rein in spending was obviously I was not going on these extravagant vacations anymore. I was not doing spa days or massages or anything like that. I cut all of that out. And then I also started to just look at like discretionary household things, you know, beauty products, stopped shopping at Sephora, decided to get makeup and things from like maybe the drugstore occasionally, or just, I literally went line by line, everything from like my supplements to household items, to just really see where I could get my, my goal was ultimately just to get my monthly expenses down to what I would call like the bare minimum, to see how I could live and if I could not feel like I was being deprived. And then the other aspect of the reason why I was living the paycheck to paycheck is because I had a lot of medical debt from a car accident, and I had to front a lot of those bills. So I had to put a lot of things on credit cards for many years while the car accident lawsuit was being worked through the system, and it took many years. So I was carrying a lot of credit card debt from that accident. And so quite a lot of my paycheck during those years were going towards credit card debt payments. And of course, you know, I admit to some of those credit card debts were also those vacations in the restaurants. So once I was able to kind of wipe out the credit card debt, once I got my car accident settlement, I got my credit cards pretty much nearly to zero. And at this moment right now, I'm pretty much like have maybe $2,000 left on one card, which has been mostly like co-pays for medical treatments, but I can pay it off like this month. So I'm pretty much at that zero credit card debt, which feels really good. And so, like I said, my paycheck to paycheck history was a combination of that credit card debt and then just the lifestyle adjustments that, you know, I then made later to really rein in the big three.
Okay. Another instance where there's like eight directions I want to go in. So we'll come back to the car accident momentarily. I want to go back to the expenses and your plan. The big three, like you said, you sort of narrowed it down, but I'm curious, did you know your expenses before this exercise?
No, I did not. I had never even really considered it. I had worked actually with a planner and she helped budget my fixed expenses. So I kind of knew what my utility bills were, rent, payments, things like that. But I was very much living under the premise that I was spending way less than I actually did, especially, like I said, on food or just random things like, oh, I have to go pay for parking now. And that's like valet. And in LA, it's like $15. Like, I just wouldn't think about those things. So I very much had little to no awareness about my true expenses per month. And so when I discovered Fi, I really started to pay more attention, but it wasn't overnight. It really took, it was a struggle. My internal desires of just wanting to have like immediate gratification or going on a fun weekend trip or like getting a nice massage. Like I just had to really rewire my brain to just constantly remind myself of my most important why, which was to have actual freedom. And once I was able to understand that, unless I really got these expenses reined in or were more conscious, I was always going to have to work a job I didn't like. And that suddenly really became more and more apparent, especially with more recent jobs I had had, which were just really awful and stressful. And it's almost like my desire to not have to do that type of work and to have true autonomy finally became more important. And now it's been like a miracle in terms of how I view my spending, especially on things like restaurants. Like now I get annoyed or won't go to a restaurant if I feel like it's too expensive or there's no value for what I'm getting. And I'd actually much rather go to like a local taco shop and spend $15 or go to happy hour. And so part of the way I was able to train myself to get out of expensive food costs was to come up with that list of frugal joys or alternatives. So I could still get that like novelty fix or feel like, oh, I'm eating out. This is a treat. This is like interesting food, but I'm looking for the cheaper alternatives. And in LA, luckily there is a lot to kind of research or go to. Food costs have gone up as well, obviously everywhere. And so that has made me more mindful of the places I choose to eat now.
And then digging in just a little bit, was it hard for you to go and determine your expenses because it could be scattered, like depending on how you spend through different credit cards, could be some cash thrown in there. For us, when we first did our expenses and analysis and stuff like that, we had been using the same credit card. So it was just like we pulled in a report, kind of categorized it and it was pretty solid and we could track that. We've been tracking it for years. And so I'm curious about that. And then I'll mention one thing personally. For me, I spent exactly like you talked about until I got married, and my wife is much better with she was like, what are your expenses? Like, she has a budget. She would go through fucking weekly and reconcile and like look at everything like since she got out of college or was in college. And I was just like, oh, there's money coming in. Everything's great. Don't worry about it. And yeah, I had no clue like what I was spending at all. So she got me on track pretty quick, but it was a little bit of a headache. I was like, well, when I got a mortgage, like I went through these expenses, which were the baseline of what I had to pay, but that's not what I was spending at all. So anyway, was it hard going through the exercise to figure all that shit out?
Yeah, absolutely. I was definitely spending on multiple credit cards or debit cards. And then I worked with this financial coach, not really giving me advice on investments. And she turned me on to a now defunct card called Cube.
Q-U-B-E.
Yeah, it's like digital cash envelopes. That really helped a lot. However, because I was still being very unintentional, I still couldn't I would still just blow through every category. Now the way I have been able to veer away, because like I said, it was a challenge. Even before I discovered FI, I was still trying to track my expenses, but because I wasn't consistent and I was using multiple cards, it was not obviously the most strategic or smart way to do it. But now I'm doing a new card called Crew, C-R-E-W, which is basically that cash envelope style, digital cash envelope style way of spending, and you preload this debit card and then you can click a button and say, this is for restaurants or this is for groceries. So that's how I'm managing my money now. And I would say that it's still been a challenge not to go over budget, but it's better because I am trying not to spend on multiple cards and I'm just trying to streamline it onto this card. But that's still a bit in transition. But yeah, tracking my expenses, I just realized I need to just be one card consistent. And unfortunately, I think these like debit cards don't have as great of a reporting function that my credit cards used to. But I've realized that, you know, credit cards are just not good for me. Like, they're just dangerous. Oh, boy. So I should just, yeah. I mean, I did it a lot of times for all the points and that got me some great travel benefits. But until I can really, I think, feel solid with my spending, like really trust myself, I'll probably still try to use this debit card cash envelope style. And then I do use my Capital One Venture card for travel booking, because obviously it's better to have a credit card for car rentals and hotels and airfare and things like that.
Totally. Okay. Yeah. Super interesting. So a couple other, now we'll move to the sort of social side, even though I think we could probably talk for another hour. I could keep asking like more follow-up questions on the expenses, but people get the idea. So you change your spending habits, which probably changed some of your social interactions. How were family and friends reacting to perhaps you'll decline an invitation to go out to eat, for example? So how was that on you? How was it on them? Seems like it could be a little stressful.
Yeah, I mean, luckily, I think for my friends who are not necessarily on the FI journey, I would kind of make alternative suggestions. Or if I did go to eat, and I still do this actually, this is actually present tense behavior. If they suggest a restaurant, let's say for brunch or dinner, I'll go, but I'll like, you know, maybe eat a little bit more beforehand and maybe just get an appetizer. Or I will deliberately like not eat out at all for a whole week so that I have sufficient budget to spend. One of the main, through this exercise of my path to FI, was also discovering and realizing that I needed to be more intentional about what I value. And so really, obviously, freedom, autonomy, not having a boss. And then number two was connection with meaningful friendships or my partner. So I did allow myself to figure out, like I said, these frugal joy alternatives were okay. And I would suggest to friends, like if they wanted to do something, I would say, hey, can we go for like a walk and just grab a coffee instead? So it hasn't actually sacrificed too much. There are times when maybe a friend will want to go on like a trip or vacation. And then I have to decline that because that's, you know, something I would rather not spend my money towards now, but maybe in the future I could. But I do think that luckily, you know, friends and family have been pretty supportive. And I've obviously made some new friends in the FI community. And that has also helped relearn how to still have the fun without a high expense.
Yep. Okay. And that coffee and walk trick is a pretty good one because I'm like, I mean, I like to eat out, but sometimes I'm like, oh, we're just going to sit around and they're trying to turn the table and we're kind of rushed anyway. Like,
yeah,
it's nice outside. It's nice in LA. Like you can go walk outside, yeah, enjoy a park. Like, why not enjoy the good weather?
Yeah, so, exactly. I did that this Saturday. I met a friend and she brought her dog and we just went for a walk around the marina and the park and it was like zero cost.
Yeah, it's great. Just you can bring a coffee from home or drink water, exactly, or whatever you want to do.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So you lived alone like most of your adult life and you moved in with your partner. And I hope it's okay to ask this, but I'm just curious, what's that been like so far?
Yeah, so we have been living together now for probably almost a year and a half, and it's actually been going great. I mean, I think prior to us deciding to move in together, we were obviously spending, you know, several days at each other's houses. And I could tell from just a compatibility perspective, we were, you know, we got along well. And like, I'm a little bit more messy. And so if he can tolerate that, then that's great. And so that was obviously for me a big challenge, was finding someone who'd be okay with me being a little bit messier. And then from a financial perspective, we both discovered the FI movement and he's gone to the Choose FI meetings. And so he got really excited about it too, and also has really revamped his expenses. One of the things that made me confident about moving in with him and why it's been smooth is because we decided to, you know, split our rent and take on certain utility payments. So it's a very equitable arrangement. And then in terms of like, you know, cleaning the house, we both have different responsibilities, and shopping for groceries. So it's been very easygoing. And I had lived with partners a long, long time ago back in New York, probably just once or twice, and those didn't go over very well. And we're just miserable. You know, I soon moved out. But like, I think also because we both decided to move into this place together and it wasn't one person moving into the other person's space. So there wasn't a sense of like one person being more territorial. So it's been going great. I mean, it's better than I could have ever have hoped. And so we get along great. And we also have our own separate lives a lot. I have my own group of friends and hobbies. And then he also has his. So we're not together 24/7. And he also works in an office 5 days a week. So we have enough time apart so that when we are together, it's more meaningful because we're not in each other's space all the time.
Gotcha. That's awesome. It, like, obviously moving in with someone, it sort of amplifies the interactions and that sort of thing. So that's really pretty amazing. The interesting part, so did you discover FI independently, or one of you found it first and told the other? How did that go?
So I found it first because I have a tendency to just kind of binge podcasts. And once I discovered all the FI podcasts, I got him on board. So I introduced it to him and told him I wanted us to go check out this Choose FI meetup. The first one was in Culver City. And, you know, we loved it and just started going monthly. And then I got him turned on to some of the podcasts and also The Simple Path to Wealth, which he loves that book so much now that he buys copies for his own friends and gives it to them, which is really cool. So, and I've obviously shared my love of this, but I pretty much discovered it first just because I was naturally the one who listens to more podcasts than he does.
Gotcha. All right. And it's also cool that he was on board quickly, because that's the other struggle where one person's trying to really push it on and not everybody's super interested. So... Thanks for listening to the show. That was the Mile High FI podcast, and I'm Doug Cunnington. If you dig the show, please do three things for us. Number one, tell a friend, a family member, an enemy about the show. We really don't care who you tell. Maybe forward them a specific show that you know that they will like. It's the single most helpful thing that you can do to spread the word. It's like giving us a virtual high five, and actually we don't give high fives in person, so the virtual kind's pretty good. And more importantly, your friend or family member or even your enemy will appreciate the fact that you were thinking of them. Number two, make sure you're following or subscribed on your podcast app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Overcast, YouTube, whatever you're using, and that way you won't miss a show. And number three, please leave us a rating and review. We read them on the show occasionally, and you might hear yours out there on an upcoming episode. Quick disclaimer, this show is not financial or legal advice. I'd actually be surprised if it sounded like it. It's really just for entertainment, and that's at least what we're hoping for. But seriously, get advice from professionals. So we'll catch y'all next week. You spent a lot of money on food in the past. So what were your go-to cuisines that you really enjoy going out to? And you could place it in the context of like being in LA and the kind of restaurants that mm-hmm. are around there too.
Oh, yeah. I mean, pretty much I was always interested in food. I lived in New York right after college. So obviously that's a huge food town. And I didn't really learn how to cook because I lived in a very small apartment with a very small kitchen. And pretty much I've lived in all these big cities, New York, San Francisco, now LA. And so going out to eat was just pretty much a habit. After work, I would just go to a restaurant. I was typically looking at Eater and finding out whatever the new hottest restaurants were. So the cuisine did range, you know, everything from like Japanese to Italian to, you know, American or French. It just really didn't matter necessarily the cuisine. I was just very obsessed with trying kind of like the newest and hottest restaurants or chefs. And so pretty much if I had like a favorite cuisine, it would probably be like Japanese and Italian. And, you know, obviously those are two very common cuisines throughout America, but in these bigger cities, a lot of these chefs, you know, have very high prices. They do extreme upcharges where you're paying like $50 for a plate of pasta in some places. It's ridiculous. However, back then when I was just very unintentional about spending and not really considering what was more important to me, spending that type of money on a plate of pasta or going out to Japanese or sushi, which is really expensive, to me, it was just part of my routine and I didn't really think twice about it. And of course, now I would really balk at spending that much money on food. And I realize also through a lot of the work I've done in the past couple of years, a lot of the reasons why I was spending so much money on things like expensive food or vacations is because my work was so incredibly stressful that spending money on food or vacations were to me considered like a stress relief or a treat. And it was my coping mechanism.
Yeah. Now, are you the kind of person that orders the same thing at the same restaurant, or do you try a bunch of different stuff on the menu as you go back to your favorite restaurants?
I generally like to try a bunch of different things. I'm usually more experimental. So I always want to make sure if there's like a favorite and this is a restaurant I go back to all the time, then I'll probably get the favorite, but also try to get like an appetizer or something new because I'm very, you know, to me, I really enjoy novelty and new experiences. And part of that is trying other aspects of the menu.
Okay. And then that said, and you kind of alluded to it, so you often would go to new places to try even more. So that's exciting. The novelty is exciting. And then more stuff on the menu and all that.
Yeah. Yeah. And through kind of my discovery of the Phi movement and also realizing that, like I said, a lot of the reason I was spending so much money on all these experiences, whether it be food or vacations or like wine tasting or getting a massage, is because I was actually seeking novelty. And like that to me was my dopamine hit, was anything new is great and I'll pay whatever it costs to get that, you know, dopamine hit of experiencing something exciting. Or it doesn't even have to be at such a high level. Like I would never go skydiving or anything like that, but it was just this idea that very much so I would just get really bored of the routine and eating the same thing over and over again. Or, you know, for me, travel has always been a big part of my life since I was basically a teenager.
Yeah. And we'll probably get into it in the interview, but do you cook a little bit more now than you did before?
I'd say still very basic level cooking, but I pretty much probably a year ago, year and a half ago, when I started to become more serious about cutting my expenses, I got like an Instant Pot and I had already had an air fryer and I started just looking up recipes online and getting very easy cookbooks. And so now I would say I pretty much eat at home every meal, except maybe like one dinner out a week, maybe a lunch. It's pretty rare that I go to restaurants now, and I try to shop at cheaper places like Trader Joe's and just be more mindful about how I'm spending money on food. So it's been a huge like reset for me. I've had to really rewire my mind and tendencies to want to just go out and experience food outdoors or like at a restaurant or, you know, somewhere really like with a cool setting, which was also part of the experience. And so now, yeah, I'm really proud of myself for pretty much, yeah, like I don't mind it either. I'm not like reluctant. I used to be reluctant. Things changed when I really identified that for me, being able to not go back to corporate life and going back to kind of the jobs I used to have, that to me was absolutely finally clicking in my head that like this is the most important goal. Therefore, anything else that I have to do to accomplish that is worth it. And so now I really don't mind eating and cooking at home. And I consider eating at a restaurant now more as a treat versus like it's just my everyday routine.
Yep. Well, the funny thing is I could relate to like the job stress, because like when I traveled, we would get a per diem and it was great. So it was like stressful, kind of sucky. And yeah, I would just be like, all right, I'm going to get this food, get drinks, whatever. Like I still wouldn't spend my full per diem, that kind of thing also. Sure. But at the same time, it kind of puts you in the habit of doing that. And then for years, we would cook at home, which I really enjoy. And we got in the habit. So that was the default. And we almost never go out, but we're trying to go out more, which is a weird thing where we're like, we have it in the budget. We can go out. We can support the local restaurants and try different stuff. And it's a weird mindset shift, especially like in contrast with your situation where you're like, okay, you got to switch the default to a new thing. But for both of us, it's a little bit of a challenge. And again, I enjoy cooking. So it is like, okay, well, it's a treat not to have to clean up everything maybe, right? So it's kind of a switch, but it's a struggle to change your mindset on that stuff.
Yeah, especially if it was my default pretty much like since leaving home, you know, like even in college, I was eating at restaurants all the time.